Returning to the barn, Quillern found it good to be greeted by importunate yowls and waving tails, even though he knew the cat's real motive. He diced roast beef for them and heated both packages of macaroni and cheese for himself. Dicing, thawing, and pressing the button of the computerized coffee maker were his only kitchen skills. After dinner, the three of them gravitated to the library area for a session of reading. Quillern's growing collection of old books was organized according to category: biography, classic fiction, drama, and so forth. Yum Yum waited patiently for him to sit down and make a lap. Coco was alert and awaiting his cue. "Book! Book!" It was one of several words understood by Cow Ko Kung. Among them, treat, brush, leash, and no. The cat surveyed the expanse of shelving before jumping up and teetering on the edge of the classic fiction collection. He sniffed the bindings critically, then pawed Swiss Family Robinson with enthusiasm. A curious choice, Quillern thought. He realized it was mere coincidence, but a provocative one, Coco having a unique sense of association. Yet the connection between an 1813 Swiss novel and the inventor of Kabibbles was too absurd even for a willing believer like Quillern. He sprawled in his lounge chair and propped open the book and said, "This is a book primarily for young people, but is suitable for cats of any age. There are chapters on, whales, turtles, ostriches, and bears. You'll like it. Chapter 1, Shipwrecked and Alone." Yum Yum was the first one to sigh and close her eyes. Then Coco started swaying drowsily. Finally, Quillern, mesmerized by the sound of his own voice, read himself to sleep. When Quillern set out to interview Floyd Trevelyan, his route lay out itty-bitty Wassey Road between stony pastures and dark woods, past abandoned mines and ghost-like shaft houses. After passing the Buckshot Mine, he reached a fork in the road. Ahead was Indian Village, a swanky complex of apartments and condominiums. Hummock Road branched off to the left, forming a triangular meadow where carpoolers left their vehicles. Beyond the meadow, the road passed a blighted hamlet or two before emerging in a landscape of knobby hills, bucolic vistas, and no utility poles. All cables were underground, and the road curved to avoid cutting down ancient trees. Then there was a rural mailbox shaped like a locomotive, and a sign hanging between railroad ties announcing the Roundhouse. There was nothing round about the residence that perched on a hill at the end of the drive. It was a long, low, contemporary building with wide overhangs and large chimneys, and the rough cedar exterior was stained a gloomy brownish green. Quillern parked at the foot of a terraced walkway and climbed wide steps formed from railroad ties, then rang the doorbell and waited in the usual state of suspense. Would this interview make a great story, or would it be a waste of his time? The man who came to the door, wearing crumpled shorts and a tank top, was obviously one of the hairy Welshmen for whom Sawdust City was famous. Although balding toward the brow, his head was rimmed with hair that was black and bushy, and although his jaw was clean-shaven, his arms and legs were thickly furred. So also was his back, Quillern discovered, upon following him into the foyer. His initial greeting had been curt. "You from the paper?" "Jim Quillern. Dwight Summers tells me you have a railroad empire on the premises."
"Downstairs. You want a shot or a beer?"
"Not right now, thanks. Let's have a look at the trains first." Following the collector toward a broad staircase to the lower level, Quillern quickly appraised the main floor. Poorly furnished.